Welcome to Creative Spirits Unleashed, where we talk about the dilemmas of balancing work and life. And now, here's your host, Lynn Carnes.
Hello, and welcome to the Creative Spirits Unleashed podcast. This is Lynn Carnes, your host, and today I am excited to introduce to you Chris Brond and Karen Van Sickler. This is a couple that I met almost 20 years ago when I moved to Lake Lure for the first time. What made us become almost immediate friends was that we had something in common on every level. They were a young couple, as we were, moving from the city to the little town of Lake Lure to both be corporate citizens and work in the corporate world, but also have a life in the weekends that allowed them to do outdoor activities like we all love to do together. So we water skied together, hiked together, and did all kinds of things outdoors as we got to know each other. And then over the years, he actually became the town manager for this town of Lake Lure to apply all of his amazing corporate project management skills to our town. And then Karen got an amazing job with AmerisourceBergen, and so they started splitting time between Charlotte and Lake Lure. Eventually, they decided to become entrepreneurs. And for anybody that's ever lived in the secure world of salaries and projects and dense work, taking that leap to become an entrepreneur is a huge leap. But they were more than ready for it until now, when the recent coronavirus has hit in the spring of 2020. And that's what we talk about in this podcast. This one is titled A Playbook for Adversity because they are building it as they go, and they've had their entire lives and careers to figure out how to do this. I wanted to talk to them because I knew they were thinking about things not just on the level of what to do about their business, but on the level of public policy, on the level of problem solving, on the level of transformation and change that happens as a result of all of this, and on a level of handling their own lives and that of their employees. So we really dive in on this conversation to that playbook for adversity, and we just touch on so many different topics about how they got through it, not just from a logical standpoint, but also through the emotional change curve that we all go through, the sort of 7 stages of grief. Some people have 4 stages, some people have 5 stages. I don't care how you label it when things change, you're going to go through some emotions. And they share and pull back the curtain on how they've navigated through that as well. So let me give you a little bit of a background on the two of them, just so you know who we are talking to here. Karen was a management consultant, and there she led, you know, technology and business teams through multiple transformational change and growth opportunities. She supported organizations from the United States, the Caribbean, diverse set of industries. And Karen is all about building correct collaborative relationships and efficient process of design, sort of in everything she's engaged in. Putting those two together is a powerful combination. She also loves CrossFit, and she is one fit woman. She loves to ride mountain bikes, and she also really loves to garden and loves the contemplative nature of gardening. Chris, who also co-owns Pampered Pets Inn with her, is a computer programmer. He's been a regional manager for a pest control service. He was a partner in a global management consulting firm. He, as I mentioned, was the town manager of Lake Lure. And he also was part of the group that built the local charter school that my husband Russ was involved in. They stood up a school from the ground up. In every one of these experiences, he learned how to build, to fix, to transform something. And every single one of those endeavors built new skills, which he's applying in today's world. Now, when he's not working, he also loves to be in the mountains. He climbs, he skis, he bikes, he hikes. And right now, his project is building out the custom camping van for he and Karen's adventures with their dogs. Because, of course, if you own the Pampered Pets Inn, you better have a couple of dogs, which they do. So I really think you'll get a lot from this podcast. I hope you enjoy it. So Karen, Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for agreeing to do this. Just for historical context, it is the end of March 2020, and we are in the middle of social distancing all over the world. As you have already heard on the introduction, Karen and Chris are the owner of a pet salon. Give everybody the name of your business.
It's Pampered Pets Inn. We do pet boarding, so dogs and cats. We do dog daycare. We have a salon, a spa, and then we also do dog training.
So my guess from our emails, a little bit of exchange, is your world is changing. You all are, like, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you guys right now is y'all are, talk about being on the front lines. You're kind of on the front lines, but more like in the bullseye of the impact of this thing.
Absolutely. So what has always been great about our business is that we have lodging and daycare. So when lodging's slow, we have a lot of daycare. But right now, it's been a double whammy because nobody's traveling and everybody's working from home. So the lodging has fallen off almost completely and the daycare has fallen off almost completely. So we're left with basically a little bit of dog training and some dog baths.
Our business is very seasonal, and everybody in our industry gets used to the ups and downs of the seasons, and you can plan for that and fill in other services. So summer is a very big season for us. Thanksgiving and Christmas is very big. We tend to have kind of a quiet time until we hit mid-March, and then April is wide open, typically with spring break and with Easter. So we were really in a mode of hiring up and getting ourselves ready to be at full capacity, and the bottom just totally fell out. And we've always known how tied we were to travel, but we really never... and we've had brief outages where, you know, a hurricane has come through or a potential of a hurricane has come through. And it's given us a glimpse of when everybody just hunkers down and freezes in place and nobody moves, nobody travels. But that's lasted at most a week. And then we're right back to normal.
Right.
So this is not something that we ever really even imagined. And our industry is probably most similar to anybody associated with airlines or hotels or airports that rely mostly on travel. It's just done for a while.
And it's interesting because you're saying it's done for a while, but we don't know how long.
Right. That's true. So trying to plan, it's, you know, there we are in the midst of it, and we know we have to do something, but what we do is based on how long this is going to happen. So in the case of a hurricane, you know what, you can pretty much figure out what the end time is going to be. But here, our plan for, is it 2 weeks? Is it 4 weeks? Is it 2 months? Like, what we want to do and the options available to us are different based on the length of time.
Right.
The thing that's hard to navigate right now, just socially and with other businesses, is you made a comment that, you know, in where you are and your particular work life, things have not yet changed that much. We're finding that people's worlds are very different depending on where you are and what you do. Mm-hmm. And so while our business is we're scrambling and we're, you know, really trying to figure out, you know, what does the next month look like? What does tomorrow look like? You go out and other businesses are busier than they've been. Yep. And other people are really, their world hasn't been affected yet. So it's just it's kind of hard on the equilibrium to switch back and forth between we're in a pandemic plague and, hey, it's beautiful spring and business is busy for some people.
It strikes me that I've always seen this kind of thing happen. Chris, you sent me back an email after I sent out my Rough Waters Make Good Sailors blog, and I really read your thoughts in detail, and you talked about how the flag business did so well after 9/11. And it made me think about business, you know, times like this where we,
have opportunity for some people and not for others. And that's exactly what you're saying. Some companies, some businesses are going to have more opportunity than ever thanks to this. Like, we're on a Zoom call. Talk about a business that is getting more business than ever is how to work virtually like we are.
Right.
Yeah. And some of that is, I think, good planning on people's part and being strategic. A lot of it has been luck. Restaurants, I think, initially thought that they were going to be hammered. And fortunately, they found a way to pivot. And while servers have been hit hard, if you're cooks, if you're delivery drivers, if you're helping to take carry out meals, at least in Charlotte, the restaurants are, I think they're going to be able to hang on.
Yeah. And what kind of, y'all are in Charlotte, how many people are having it right now? Like, does it feel like it's going to, like a bunch of sparks are going to spread, or does it feel like y'all are containing it pretty well?
Who knows? It's like nationally, it sort of depends on which projections and prognostics you listen to. I think there's, at least from Mecklenburg County has done a stay-at-home order. The surrounding counties are starting to do that as well. The number of confirmed cases is going up. I don't feel that there's a lot of testing going on yet. Mm-hmm. But I think, at least from a government perspective, they're being very realistic about the math of exponential growth. They're being realistic about the science and thinking that there's really very little reason that our area won't experience the wave and the spike that New York and others will. So we're preparing for that. But on the other hand, I think there's a theory that we're going to test as a society that says early social distancing is going to help, and it's going to help reduce that spike in places like Charlotte, and we'll hope.
Well, I think what's interesting is right now there haven't been a lot of reported cases, so people don't know other people who have gotten sick yet. So it's a kind of a little bit of an unreal world. Like, we're doing these things to avoid getting sick, and we're trusting in the experts and so forth, but nobody has any hands-on experience with it. So
in the people that we know and encounter, again, they're all living in different worlds. We have friends and family that haven't left their house in 10, 11 days.
Whoa.
And are getting delivered to them. They're living daily news briefs from Andrew Cuomo in New York, and they're watching what's going on around the world, rest of the world, and they fully anticipate that that's coming here. But then you step outside, and there's more people outside running and walking and taking their kids and their dogs than we've ever seen, because everybody's working from home. Mm-hmm. And Home Depot and Lowe's, and the parking lot is packed. And not of people necessarily, prepping for disaster. I'm just talking contractors, just regular day in, day out. Their jobs haven't changed. Yeah. People are building stuff. So it's hard to judge.
I think there are also people that are posting about how much they're enjoying this time. Mm-hmm. So I think for a lot of people, their companies are paying for them to work from home. So this seems like an adventure. So they can, they can cook a new recipe, and they can spend more time with their dog and their kids. And so, I know, at least from our peer group, I think we're the only ones kind of experiencing an economic impact from this. Everybody else is being able to pivot. It's just a lifestyle change as opposed to an economic change for them.
Right, right. And you said, Chris and Karen, both, one of the things that really struck me when you were talking about people watching, like Andrew Cuomo, and here you are in Charlotte, and you're watching what's happening in a different hotspot within our country, but in a way, a world away. And mm-hmm. I've also noticed that some people will turn the news on all day, whether their flavor of the month is conservative or not conservative, liberal or whatever. But what I've noticed is, how do you get your perception? How do you guys make sure that the data you're making your decisions from is good data? Because I noticed just this morning on the news, they were repeating a statistic from Wednesday, as if it was new, because they didn't have a new, worser statistic to share. And I was like, well, they're still trying to get the news. But if I hadn't been kind of tuned into that, I would have gone, oh my gosh, more people are dead. Well, it was this, it was an old statistic actually. So how are y'all doing that? How are you managing your perception?
So from a business perspective, we relied on our business data. So we, so when it first, you know, when the first stories start coming out, we just looked at our numbers, our reservation numbers and so forth. And so it really didn't matter for us what we believed.
Right.
To some degree. It didn't really matter what we believed. It mattered what our customers believed and how their lives were being impacted. So we just looked at the reservations, and there was a point at which we noticed the trend, and we realized that, and that's when we started balancing different concerns. So we don't have enough reservations to, we don't have enough business to cover payroll. Mm-hmm. And that's when you start doing the math of, is it less expensive to stay open or to close? And then you start thinking about, okay, well, how long would I have to close? Because if I close and then I reopen in a week or two, I might as well just stay open and gut it out. Mm-hmm. But then you start thinking about, okay, there's risk to your customers about coming in. There's risk to your employees when they come in. So then you start doing things to minimize risk while you're trying to make a longer term decision. So we moved to curbside pickup, and we started doing a lot more cleaning, although we actually do a lot of cleaning already, but there's some additional things we did. So we did some things, so we minimized the risk to the customers pretty much. Like, there really wasn't much contact for them at that point. Mm-hmm. But then we look at our employees, and they're still having to come in, and they're still having to interact with other employees. And so you just start weighing the pros and cons of all those and just notice the trends. And so when our business isn't in Mecklenburg County, it's actually in Iredell County, but some of our customers are in Mecklenburg. So when the Mecklenburg shelter in place came out, it was, okay, now that's helped. We were already poised to close, but when that came out, it's like our business is going to drop off even more. So we can handle it. So this will accomplish several things. It'll handle our the risk to our employees if we go ahead and close. It'll address the business risk about, you know, paying more for payroll than we can get in revenue. So it didn't really matter what we thought about the pandemic risks. It was really about what the external drivers were telling us to do.
To your question about general news, I think what I found, at least, is every day I look at a variety of sources, and I give more weight to primary sources, kind of like a historian will go directly to the person that knows. So I think experts have sort of risen to prominence here. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to see when they get TV time, and it's not filtered through somebody that's reporting or that's taking a soundbite out of that. So it's been informative, you know, to watch, you know, Dr. Fauci, who's been in that job amazingly since the 80s, and Cuomo as a leader up in New York, and other leaders I think are really shining in this moment. And then when you read about, you know, the experts that are running the math and doing the projections and reporting on what's working and what's not, you sort of have to read the doom and the gloom and read the positive and figure that casts a cone of possible futures, and we're going to be somewhere within that cone, and that cone moves every day. And so we sort of prepare for the worst and hope for the best and see what tomorrow brings.
Well, you know, there's so much I want to unpack in what you're talking about, because it's, first of all, back to what Karen said, you all didn't sort of decide what to do randomly. You let the situation tell you what to do.
Yes, that's right. And each day, it was about every single day rerunning the numbers and relooking at things and talking to customers and talking to staff. Like, every day was a exercise in disaster planning.
as an example, we would have 50% of our reservations upcoming cancel. We would call them, and in that conversation they would cancel out. They're not going anywhere, or they would call us. So while everything is clearing off the books rapidly. At the same time, the phone rings all day and we add three or four new bookings. And it was kind of astounding to us. Like, where are these people going? What are they doing? But they have a need for somebody to take care of their dog.
Right.
So that made it difficult for us daily to see, is anybody still booking? And what do they need? And why do they need it? And are we the resource? Are we the right resource for them? And that's a responsibility that we felt, balanced with all those other drivers that Karen talked about. If everybody just canceled on us, it would be easy decisions to make, but they were never easy.
And then the numbers get to a point where we were in a position where we had a lot of animals coming in. So from a staffing perspective, we had a lot more. We had a lot of efficiencies of scale. We have some specialized positions, and we've gotten kind of a comfort level in terms of staffing. It's like, okay, we know how many we need, and you get into a rhythm. And then this happens, and all of a sudden you have the fewer pets we have in house, the more accurate we have to be with our staffing level, because that's relational to how much money we'll lose.
Sure.
So if we're overstaffed, we're going to lose a lot more money. So we had to pivot and get much more refined in terms of exactly how many pets in house can we have and what staffing level do we need to have for this many pets a house? Because I was determined that our quality wasn't going to go down. So we have very strict rules around how many dogs can be out in the yard with a handler at one time and very strict cleaning protocols. I didn't want any of that to go. I didn't want customers to have to not get called back for hours at a time. And so really had to think about how we can still deliver quality, our level of service, but with fewer people.
Wow.
And then on top of that, you've got people calling and canceling, other people calling at the last minute making reservations, and then you have no shows. So people whose lives have been just totally turned upside down and they forget to call and cancel their reservation. So it's like, oh my gosh, how do you staff for this? And that was very challenging to do.
So we made the decision a couple days ago that the best thing for the business and the best thing for everybody was to cease operations for a period of time. That corresponded with Mecklenburg County doing their stay-at-home order. And in announcing that, rolling that news out to the staff and rolling it out to our customers, I feel we're ahead of most other businesses. At least in our industry, there's a number that are still trying to kind of hang on and gut it out. And many of them will probably be able to do so, have a different model than we do. But I also feel like, you know, in all probability, we're just ahead of things. In that if this gets worse, which it's likely to do, I think other businesses are going to do the same numbers and come to the same conclusions and be closing. And one of the things that we're hoping is that we're helping our staff get ahead of that wave and get, you know, unemployment applications in ahead of other people and get ourselves prepared before, you know, while it still feels relatively quiet here.
Yeah.
The other nice thing that I think it did was, so by removing us, some of our customers still need services. And so we were able to, refer them to another family owned business in the area. So we were in close communication with some other places. And so some of our customers already have reservations at the other place. So we're giving them a little bit of business to help them stay open. But by kind of reducing the amount of competition, it's making it a little bit easier maybe for them to stay open.
Right.
We met with our managers yesterday to pivot into our maintenance mode now that we're going to cease operations and be closed, you know, for a temporary but indefinite period. We still have a building and an outdoor pool. And
fish
to feed. we've got a variety of things that need daily attention. So it's interesting. We've kind of, you know, mothballed the factory, and yet we're on a rotating schedule where ourselves and our key management team are going to visit and check on things, maintain some things, and then also take the opportunity to get some projects done that have been on our list for a while.
Yeah. I cannot imagine how difficult some of those conversations, by the way, have had to be with people. Because, you know, when you're building a business like you've been building, you cultivate your staff. You have such a high level of quality that you do everything in your power to sort of empower them and get them excited and fired up to be great, especially when you've got a busy time coming, and then to have it just have the rug pulled out from under you. What has that been like, having to have those kind of difficult conversations?
Well, it's heartbreaking to dismantle something that you've worked so hard to build. It's like, what? So we sort of focused on the to-dos. What's interesting is our staff seems more concerned about how we feel because they realize how hard this is for us.
Yeah.
So our staff's been wonderful. When we ask them to work, they work. Some of them were quick to volunteer. Like they came forward and said, give somebody else my hours. When the hours started declining, people would recognize like, hey, I can get by, I'm living with my parents, or I've got other means of support, give my hours to somebody else. So we had staff volunteering hours for other people. They were very flexible about the hours. Nobody complained about it at all. They would come to work cheerful. They would do their job. And then they would just showed a lot of concern for us and how we felt. So.
Yeah, it's been amazing. It's been really encouraging that we haven't had really difficult conversations with anybody because, you know, as Karen said, we've focused on the fact that it is temporary and everybody is firmly committed and has faith that there is an end to this and we roar back to business and everybody comes back to work. I think that, coupled with the severity of the situation nationally and globally, I think all of our staff get it. And they've said, okay, this has to happen. This is not a misfortune that only our business is suffering. So, you know, their response has been great.
And the number one hugest support that we've gotten was the changes to unemployment. The loosening of the requirements to file for unemployment and the fact that the unemployment won't count against our unemployment insurance. So sure. It's a win-win for the employers and the employees. That was huge. That enabled us to, I won't say guilt-free, make the decision to close because you still feel guilty, but it made it a much easier decision. It's like, I'd rather them go take unemployment and be safe than to come in and we day by day try to stay open and expose them to more risk.
Right. And it's both of it. In some ways it's both risks, right? It's the financial and it is just the exposure risk.
Yeah.
Because the reason people are staying at home for 10 days is they don't want to get it.
Exactly.
10 days. I was thinking today, it feels like this has been going on forever and it's barely beginning if you really put it in,
right.
You know, its actual number of days. So how do you guys, how do you guys see yourselves navigating then the next few weeks, days or weeks? Like I know y'all used to own a nautique boat. So do I. Years ago, not that many years ago, maybe 5 years ago, I was down there for a factory tour, and they actually described how during the 2008 financial crisis, when it was clear people weren't going to be buying boats, that they retooled their factory and used it as a learning opportunity for the people they could keep on. They couldn't keep 100% on, but they kept some of them on and basically used that as a time. I think they, you know, kind of went to like a lean approach. And of course, they've come out and become quite dominant since then because they took that opportunity. And so how are you guys going to, I already know the two of you well enough to know you're already thinking about how to use this. What are you doing to take advantage of this time?
Well, what's interesting, so we've got, we bought the business. We created some management positions. We have a general manager, we have an office manager, and we have two supervisors. So our office manager and general manager, we've kept them on their salaries. We've kept them on through this through this period. And what was really exciting to see was our office manager yesterday. She's like, Karen, I want to talk to you. I've come up with a list of projects and things that I want to accomplish while during this period. So it's, and then our general manager had done the same thing. So it's really exciting to see that they're in that mindset. We've worked with them long enough that that's what they're thinking about too. But it's going to be about processes, making sure all of our processes, when we bought the business, that none of the processes were documented and everybody was kind of doing their own thing. So we have clearly established processes, but they're not, there's more we can do in terms of documenting them clearly. So we're going to get our processes updated. There are some things that we had to do as a part, or we decided to do as a part of this virus, that as I was implementing them, I'm like, you know, I'd kind of like to do this like going forward. So
Give me a for instance of something like that.
The
curbside service
for daycare. So when people come, we just take their dogs, they don't have to come into the building. But also the leashes and harnesses. So every customer, there are apparently a million different types of collars and harnesses. And yeah. My staff has to learn how to use all of them under kind of extreme circumstances.
Sure.
With a wiggly dog, trying to get a harness on and trying to figure out how to get the clasp and all that. So I like the idea of putting a lead on and having the parent take the collar and harness off. That'll help us from a labor standpoint, because a lot of times the parent comes to pick up the dog and we're like in the back trying to get the harness on the dog, and that the parent's standing there waiting for us and we're not trying to get it on.
I've been that parent and wondered how the hell did they figure out that this was the way to put the collar on. I'm like, how does that work? And then, you know, I come to the conclusion is because they got a big wriggly dog and there's a million harnesses.
Exactly. So I'm thinking that's a process that we could, maybe we'll just keep that one. Just off the top of my head, those are two.
On a kind of a bigger, more strategic level, part of the disappointment of having to shut down right now is that if you had asked us at the end of February how our business was doing, we would have had huge smiles and said, oh my gosh, this is going to be an incredible year. We had, we're about three and a half years into since we acquired the business. And the first 2 years were very much investing and retooling and transforming and kind of rebuilding the business from the ground up. It was a good business, but we wanted it to be great. So after that initial 2 years of work, last year was really great. It was really, you could see the cumulative effect. And customer and quality of customers and customer base was growing. And the last 3 to 4 months, you know, we've been beating the prior year by 30 to 40% every month.
Wow.
And it was just rolling and you know, built up a head of steam. And so it's disappointing, but that encourages us that, yeah, when this thing clears and people are traveling again, it'll pick up quickly. Strategically, our industry was in the past year undergoing a lot of change, and there was a lot of kind of big money in venture capital and private equity was discovering the pet care business and were in acquisition mode, and so there, you know, lots of offers, lots of people, you know, couples that are ready to retire, selling. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of pressure in the business to expand, and it was difficult to find places to expand because commercial real estate was so expensive. So there were lots of strategic challenges that come with a high growth phase of an industry. Now I look ahead and say, well, what's the next phase going to be? And we have no idea. Is it going to be business as usual? Or, after 2008 and 2010, the financial services business kind of got back to normal. I don't know that our society and industry will get back to normal or something different than normal. Will there be lots of mom and pop pet facilities that don't make it? just don't have the cash reserves to survive an extended outage? Does that become an opportunity to serve that market that's no longer served? Is demand for these services going to change? Who knows? So it's hard to predict. All we're trying to do right now is preserve ourselves until the storm passes and put ourselves in the best position possible to take advantage of whatever opportunities might be out there. But we don't know.
Wow. So one of the questions I had as I was listening to what you were describing, there's so many places we could go with this, because I hear you all are doing two things. You are being really current and present to what is at the moment. So you're balancing that with what might be in the future and not trying to get too far ahead of yourselves or behind. You know, and I think that's a balancing act when things are moving so quickly. Because I think a lot of people have been caught flat-footed by this. Other people might have been even too far ahead of it. But it seems to me like y'all are hitting that balance pretty well. And that you've had, it sounds like a big and ever-growing client base. So one of the questions that came up to me among the many as you were speaking was, how are you staying in touch with your customer base so that they don't forget you, so they get excited about traveling again, so they can bring their babies back to the place that, you know, doggy camp where the babies love it? How are y'all doing that?
So we have a fantastic marketing coordinator, and so we retained her as well. And so we've been up to now, we've been sending out pretty regular updates to our customers by email, Facebook, and Instagram, just letting them know what's happening. So when we made procedural changes, we'd email them about it and post. So through this process, we've been staying in close communication with them in that regard. Now during the closure, everybody's getting tons of emails from like every business they've ever done business with. So
it's a fatigue of, I don't care what your COVID-19 response
exactly.
is.
Exactly.
It's like delete. Exactly. That's what I've been doing.
So we do. We have a monthly customer newsletter, and we've been very very strict about only emailing customers once a month with promotional. So we do a customer newsletter, and that's it. Any other email they've gotten from us in the past has been confirmation emails about their upcoming reservation. So we'll have a customer newsletter, but we'll probably use then Facebook and Instagram, because those are people that want to follow us and want to keep up with what we're doing. So we'll do that. Again, it kind of comes back to how long we're out, but we're strategizing now about what kinds of updates we can provide since we have no pets in house. Normally it's pictures of cute pets that are staying with us. So we're going to have to be a little bit creative about the kinds of things we'll post. Yeah. But I have a very talented person whose job is focused on customer communication.
So one of the things that I've been noticing out there on the social media world is that people are, you know, the people and the pets who are winning are the ones who now get to have their parents at home, right?
Pets
that normally were gone or home all day with mom and dad. Same for kids, actually same for spouses. All of a sudden people were used to kind of like meeting at home with, now we're stuck at home with.
Right.
So what are you hearing about, like what I'm hearing or tuning into, most people don't want to admit this, but I think there are people who are like, you know, kind of that old retirement thing. I married you for life, but not for lunch. And, you know, I love my kids, but I maybe don't love them so much when I have to be the homeschooling parent.
Right.
Maybe the pets are different or not, but are you hearing any skinny on how people feel about being that with their loved ones, including their pets, all day long?
So I don't think it's been going on long enough yet for that. But we did get some last minute reservations this week from people, and I think that might be part of the incentive. We did run a promotion in our spa, trying to get people to get, because we knew this was coming, so we're trying to get people to bring their pets in to get baths before we close for 3 weeks.
Right.
So we had a promotion about, like, do you really want to be home with your stinky
pet? That's good.
So we got a bunch of people that are like, as a matter of fact, I don't. So we got some baths and some daycare in because of that. But yes, I definitely think that'll be part of it. I mean, we have people come to us regularly every week, for their dog to get exercise and socialization. So we definitely worried about them. We're definitely concerned about them in terms of what would happen. So one of our models might be, we might not open full in mid-April. So right now we're targeting to reopen on April 17th. It may not be a full reopen. We may just open for a couple days a week for daycare and baths.
Yeah.
Until, you know, the situation changes. So we're kind of looking at that.
Clipping that hair and clipping those nails, because I know for myself, I can do it with my dog to clip her nails.
Mm-hmm.
But I get very nervous because I've never cut into the blood, but I don't want to do it. So almost always when I have her with the doggy camp, I say, can y'all go ahead and bathe her and clip her?
Right. And a lot of people do that. And so that concerns me that we won't be there for people to, for the next 3 weeks.
One of the growth areas in our industry has been, private pet sitting and pet walking services, like an Uber or Lyft.
Sure.
And there's a couple of technology platforms that have accelerated this. Most of their growth is in big cities, where somebody can put themselves on the app and say, hey, hook me up with your dog and I'll take care of it. It's interesting that the people in the gig economy are going to really struggle during this outage, and coming out the other end, I don't know if that sector of the business will be as strong as it has been, or maybe it'll be stronger. Who knows? But the conventional brick and mortar type facilities like ours, have always been strong. It's a different sort of service, and when we come back, there'll still be a need for us. The big variable for people is how long is it going to last?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be able, as a country, be able to let this thing, I kind of think of the forest fire analogy, thinking of Lake Lure, let this fire burn out hot and quick, and then we can all get back to business. Or if through people's decisions and behaviors, if it keeps lingering and popping back and flashing up in places, and we're in it for months and months, then I think there's just a lot of businesses that won't be able to hang on, and will be in a different world, including people with corporate jobs. Right now, as we were saying earlier, it's pretty nice for people that can just work from home and keep getting their paycheck. I think that at a corporate level, if we're still in this a month or 2 months from now, there's going to be different decisions about how long their cash reserves can continue to pay people to, be at work and not selling anything.
Because even our friends who are like, I'm home from work, they can't. No, if you're in sales, nobody's buying anything, no matter what the product is.
That's exactly right. And yet for some people, it's just having to learn how to work from home and be really effective and still doing whatever thing they were doing. But, the flash that went through my mind when you were talking about that, Chris, was what happens to corporate real estate?
Yeah.
And, you've we all came out of the corporate world. We all worked in offices where there was lots of space dedicated to us having our spot to go to work every day. And if you cut that even in a third or half, all of a sudden the market is going to be flooded with all this corporate real estate.
Right.
But, what's going to go in there and what happens to that? Like the ripple effect, I think, can be pretty profound here.
Dog boarding and daycare facility.
If prices come down, then we can use that real estate. That's been our strategic struggle for the past year. Has been, we can't grow because our demand and our market is in dense urban areas like Charlotte.
Where it's expensive.
Where it's so expensive, it's prohibitive.
And the zoning.
We couldn't, and zoning is difficult. We couldn't find a place to bring our level of premium experience. We'd have to charge so much for dog lodging and daycare because of the real estate. So it's been an interesting, we kept saying, but boy, it'll be nice when the market adjusts. And gets back to something that's less than white hot. This wasn't the way that we expected that it would happen. There may be silver linings.
Well, I'm really sure there's going to be silver linings for sure in the long run, I think the real struggle is this uncertainty and what can't survive both people and businesses through the short run.
Right.
And, you know, that forest fire, Chris, we lived through that massive fire here in 2016 in Lake Lure that started with a spark, and it made me think of this virus, right? One little spark, somebody flicked a cigarette, and 7,000 acres later, they finally got that fire out. And, you know, what one thing catching another can do, but it cleared out the underbrush, and then we were much less at risk for fire. And I kind of draw that analogy to this virus. I shared that with somebody who's in the know a little bit with sort of the statistics and the medical side of it. And he pointed out that in Italy, and I think also in the United States, only 0.1% of our population has it, and yet it's overrunning the hospitals. Now, that's somewhat localized as well, but that's, I think, the flip side of it is, yeah, it's, but you still have to burn the city down and what comes out on the other side. So I've vacillated between, should we let it just burn on out, or should we let it, you know, should we do what we're doing? Mm-hmm. Have y'all had those kind of second, I'm curious about the second guessing, because what I'm really talking about is how I second guess what we're doing, what the guidance in the country is. What kind of second guessing have y'all found yourselves in the middle of all this?
Oh, I think it's exactly those two pieces. It's like, oh my gosh, this is a disaster, and everybody's going to get sick, and we understand the impact of the hospitals. And I mean, that's absolutely one image we have. And then you read some more optimistic pieces from qualified experts who have a little bit different take on it. So that's why it's like, oh my gosh, what if we close down and then this passes, and then, you know, we're closed and now we got to reopen. I mean, we vacillated between the two, but.
What is much ado about nothing, although it doesn't seem to be that, you know.
I definitely don't think it's much ado about nothing. I think it's really just more about what's the best way. Do you just grin, not grin, but, you know, do you just grit your teeth and just get through it quickly? I don't know.
I don't either. It's your analogy about the rough waters and sailors. This is like, I think the calm before the hurricane. And hurricanes are a similar analogy that some people just are like, hey, let's have a party and ride it out. Other people bail. And it's those days and hours beforehand that are tough, because weather is nice. Okay. And you're like, it's hard to believe that a massive storm is like going to be bearing down on us in a couple days. Cause right now it's beautiful. Let's hit the beach. So that's kind of the period that we're in Charlotte. We know that because we're a dense metropolitan area in North Carolina, it's going to hit here first. I mean, it already has to a small extent. Just, I mean, when is it going to spike, and what that level is going to be?
Here's what it is for me. I just want decisions to be made in a collective, collaborative way. So if our government thinks that we should just shut down, just grit your teeth. Let's just shut down. Let's organize. So while we're shut down, let's get really focused on some goals, like let's make sure everybody gets tested, let's make sure there's enough equipment. Like if we could just focus on an effective plan, I'm like, fine, we'll get behind that. It doesn't matter if I think we should close or not. It doesn't matter if I think it's a big to-do about nothing, or if I think that it's the biggest disaster ever to hit us. Like, it doesn't matter. It's like somebody needs to make the decision. We all need to work together and work towards that plan.
Yep.
And what we don't have that in this country right now. We have everybody making different decisions. And so it's frustrating, because as a business owner, it's like, do I go with this side? Do I go with this side? Do I do this? Do I do that? Do I come up with my own plan? So it's very ineffective and inefficient. And so it's going to be more impact than it probably needs to be, because we can't just all get on the same page with a plan and move forward with it.
Yeah,
and it's going to be really hard to do.
The weaknesses that we have, you know, are when you don't have a coordinated response in different regions, one region will leak over into another region. I read an interesting piece yesterday about New York that made me think of Lake Lure. And the reason, everybody knows what's happening in sort of, you know, the nexus of the crisis in New York City. Well, now it's come out after a couple of days, people realize that when the initial stay-at-home order came down, a bunch of New Yorkers didn't stay at home.
Right.
If they were affluent enough to go to their second home, their mountain house or their beach house, away they went in a highly contagious state.
Right.
And so mayors and managers of small resort communities have said, gee, we were okay until everybody poured out of the cities into our community and we're shopping at Ingles and we're mixing with everybody.
Right.
And I wonder if that's going to be the case, you know, in areas like Charlotte and Lake Lure, that it, you know, rather than locking everybody down, if we wait until it's kind of too late, then we've just ensured that it's going to spread to rural communities.
I don't think there's any way to avoid that. It dawned on me as we've been trying to calibrate our response, and I had to do some traveling earlier in the month that I didn't really want to do. But when I came back to Lake Lure and went in the grocery store and I'm looking around going, I'm not the only one that may have just gotten off. I didn't get off a cruise ship, but people have.
Mm-hmm.
I knew of at least one person in town who'd come in from Australia.
Yeah.
And so, and the this contagious thing lasting, you know, early, you could be contagious for days before you know it, going in and picking which apple to get. You know, every time I pick an apple, I'm like, I wonder how many contagious people have touched it.
Right.
You know, really having to think about those things. But I think you're right. The sparks can get, it's not just in the dense urban areas. It's any place the fire has a chance to catch. Mm-hmm. And it just takes one person carrying it for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. We're in that period right now where it's calm and it's hard to believe it's coming. And yet in a few days, we may be going, oh, we saw this coming, but never dreamed it was going to be this bad.
And the people in New York who are dealing with it are screaming at us, going, guys, it's coming.
Right.
Yeah.
And I read a quote. I don't know if I remember the exact words of it, but it was like after the fact, when you look back on what you did, you're not going to think you overreacted. So it's like, just do it. You know, like we had a customer come in and we had already started changing some of our procedures. And he's like, you know, I think this is just overblown. And I said, I hope you're right. I hope that we are overreacting. Like, that would be great.
Right.
And he's like, yeah, good point. So it's like, fine. If we're not doing this without any knowledge, we know what's happened in China. We know what's happened in Italy. Like, so it's not, this isn't a mystery, like the course of what this virus is going to do. So let's just do all the things that have been proven effective over there, but let's just all get on the same page and just do them. Take the pain. This is going to be painful. Do we want it to be like short and quick pain, or do we want it to drag on for months? Like, let's just get it over with and just do, just follow what the experts tell us we need to do. And after the fact, we can do an analysis of what worked and what didn't work. And if some of the things we did didn't work, then we know for next time. Because this is certainly not going to be the last time we have some kind of viral epidemic. So
no. In fact, if you saw, I'm sure y'all have probably seen Bill Gates' 2015 TED Talk.
Yeah.
Where he actually predicted this exact thing. And, you know, this is the way, you know, it's the small things that humanity needs to watch out for. It's like the mosquito. You know, there, if you can ask almost anybody, what is the animal that kills more humans than anything? And the mosquito kills 1 million people a year.
Wow.
And we think it's the shark. Oh, that's some thousand or whatever. Like if you actually look at the numbers and kind of put it in place, you go, wow, this little mosquito, which we just slap off our arm and hope we don't get, because we don't have malaria in the United States, but we do have some other diseases. We've had diseases that kill people. And yet we just go on about our lives.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. Yeah. It's an interesting numbers game. And I think you're right. The other analogy Russ and I've been talking about is flying a little airplane versus a supersonic airplane, like a fighter jet. Cause I had a chance one time to get in a simulator while I was taking flying lessons of a little, you know, really slow. It's almost like a bicycle of an airplane, the Cessna 150. You know, you're trucking along. You almost can't get behind the plane because it's so slow. And then you get in a really fast plane and you actually have to believe you're overreacting to even begin to stay up with the plane because everything is happening so fast. Mm-hmm. And it's a different brain mode to be in. And it made me think about your comment, Karen, about, well, we might as well overreact because we're not going to look back and think we did overreact.
Right.
And right. It's just how to get your mind wrapped around what you need to do, because it's so easy to think that can't happen to me. This couldn't happen here. This is going to impact my life too much. So what advice would you have for people who are trying to get their minds wrapped around it and how they could get real with it? Like, because y'all really strike me as having gotten real with what's happening and making really good, solid, on-time decisions. What would you say to people who are still trying to get their heads wrapped around it, to pierce through their own not wanting it to be that way? Because all of us have a little piece of that.
Well, I like the concept of, what is it, the seven stages of grief? Or
yeah.
And I just kind of, so I gave myself time for each of those. So there was the, and I don't know exactly what order they went in.
There's anger and denial.
Some of those happened at the same time for me. But, you know, when I, like, go ahead and have your angry moment. Like, embrace your angry moment. Do it. But time box it. And then, you know, have your, I don't know if depression is one, but if not, you should go ahead and time box it. Give yourself time to grieve. But just work through them. But then focusing on a goal. So it's like reset your goals. So our goals 3 weeks ago for March revenue was much different than it is now. It's just reset, like create a new goal and work towards it and create your task list and just work towards something. And so resetting goals, and like success used to mean this, success now means this. That's been really helpful for me to focus on the things I needed to do and what my new goal was.
I notice ourselves falling back on the things that we're comfortable with and that we're good at and that bring us comfort. Mm-hmm. And in a situation like this, you can't really like suddenly change the way that you think and make decisions and do work. The two of us are very analytical and we are very data driven. We always have been. And in times like this, it's been comforting for us to dig into the numbers and every day look at kind of various things, because that's a form of kind of therapy for us. It makes us feel a little bit more in control when we really have no control over this. But conversely, you can't switch to that kind of decision-making mode if that's not the kind of person that you are. If you're very instinctual, mm-hmm. and you rely a lot on listening to other people and getting a sense of where things are going, and if that works for you, find a way to keep doing that. For us, it's heads down for 2 years in rebuilding this business. Mainly what we did was we instrumented it with all kinds of data and tracking tools that were not there, so that it enabled us. We weren't thinking about a situation like this, but we were thinking about how can we run this business more remotely? How can we do well and not be there every single day? Well, we need to have, a dashboard. We need to have gauges. We need to have things that are telling us what's going on in this business. And it's been really good to have all of that in place, so that, when the storm's coming and the ship's tossing around, we have a sense of, okay, well, we really know what's going on.
The other thing is, I always like to look for silver linings. So how can we make this situation work for us? Like, what are the positive things? What will be better because of this situation?
Yeah.
And this is one that's been like really hard to find that with. So I celebrate the little ones. Like I kept meaning to reach out to a couple of the other, it was just another opportunity to network with other people in our industry that are local. So
as partners, I hope that you and I balance each other out, because I tend to be more, I look at it like actuarial science. Okay. And I'm like, well, this is the worst case scenario that could happen. And it's good to kind of balance those out. And Karen pulls me back and she's like, it's probably not going to be the worst case, but at least we know. And, somewhere it's good to, in a partner, to be able to find that balance.
To find that balance and out. Well, if you lift out and look out for a year or two or more, what do you think this is going to energize in our world, in our country, in just humanity in general? What do you see in terms of what this might energize?
Well, I have a list of things that are a wish list at this point.
My biggest one. Like, I have long been an advocate of people's health insurance should not be tied to their employer.
Right.
It's a really awful model, because people then can't switch jobs easily, which I suppose if you're not a good employer, you're like, you like that you've got people trapped, but it's a lousy system. And so I hope people will look at, there are a lot of people who are going to lose their health insurance because of this.
That's
we
right.
made the decision. So we offer health insurance as an option for our employees. Most don't take us up on it, because even though we pay 50% of their health insurance premiums, the other 50%, it's still too high for a number of our employees to be able to afford. Mm. But a few of them took it. So several of them, we just laid off, but we decided to pay their full premium while we're in this phase. But a lot of employers are going to lay their employees off, and they're going to cut their healthcare benefits. So we're going to have a lot of people now without healthcare, even more people without healthcare. So trying to get healthcare for our employees with our small business has been very, very difficult, because we have a small pool. So large corporations have a much larger pool, so their insurance costs are lower than ours are. So here we are, small business, and we're having to pay more in insurance premiums than a larger corporation. So it just doesn't have, it's just not a level playing field there.
No,
so
no parity there.
No. So health insurance, if people could just have a non-emotional, logical discussion about health insurance, we could come up with a much better solution that would enable employers as well as employees. So that's one thing that I fervently wish will come out of this situation.
I would like, and I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but you know my background. I've spent some time in government service. Mm-hmm. And have a real appreciation for the role that a well-run government, whether it's locally or at a national level, and that's not politicians, right? That's the fundamental administrators that do a heck of a lot of stuff to keep our society running.
Right.
And what I would like is coming out of this is a return of respect and appreciation for the role of small g government out there, because I think for decades we've relatively had it so well and so easy and so affluent that it's afforded us the luxury of saying, oh, we don't need government in our lives, and I can do fine on my own, and I just want to be self-sufficient. Well, it's easy to say that in good times.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hopeful that we'll have a better appreciation and respect and be willing to financially support a broader based government that can do some things like healthcare and infrastructure, and that we don't, make pariahs of people that are there, and that we can allow some of our best leaders to be in government and military. That's one of my hopes.
Yeah. It would be really nice to be able to see us be able to attract really good people into those kind of roles again.
Yes.
I think we punish people brutally for taking public service roles. Mm-hmm. And it just isn't going to attract people who are not willing to put up with that crap.
It's funny. We said this in 2008 and 2009. The country kind of woke up and said, wow, we were spending a lot of unproductive energy and capital in just making capital, and we had lots of hedge funds and investment bankers, and everybody was making mortgages, and we said, boy, we need to have more people that are making things and fixing bridges.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, maybe 2008 to 2010 will be an opportunity for us to get back into government-sponsored work projects and true things that are going to be shovel-ready and build things. And that lasted about a year and a half.
Yep.
And guess what? We went right back into venture capital and hedge funds and private equity and all that. And it only grew for a decade.
Right.
And yeah, to your point, I would like to see some of the, you know, smartest people around get adequately compensated to do more noble passions than just like, hey, I can go over here and work for a hedge fund and make oodles of money and further, you know, exacerbate that wealth divide. I'm hopeful that this will be a big enough shock to change that, but I don't know. It wasn't in 2008.
Well, we had a very long recovery, and I know for several years, I was probably way early on this to my own detriment, but I know how the cycles go. It's just like a wave. You know, having been a banker, I know things go up and they go down, and they go up and they go down. And I kept looking, saying, and I said this many times to Russ, I said, when it goes down, it's going to go down really. If we thought 2008 was bad, just wait till you see what's coming. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of this is artificially propped up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's that hedge fund churning game as opposed to something real. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't have envisioned it being this, but I did know we were, you know, in the middle of a really, really big, unreal bubble. And so it's going to be really interesting to see if we can get back to the more tangible. I had to do a road trip to Texas a couple of weeks ago, and the quality of the roads, I felt like I was in the zombie apocalypse. Right? Because all this was coming, there was a part of me as I was driving. I mean, we had Waze on and it would say like pothole on the road. We finally had to just turn it off. Mm. It's like, yeah, there's pothole everywhere.
Wow.
And as I was driving, I was thinking, I wonder if this is like the last of the civilization before, because where are they even going to get the money to fix these highways with all this stuff going on? So
yeah,
it's sort of, I look at it and I can put on my very bleak glasses, and I can put on, you know, my more silver lining glasses and see it both ways. And I'm just really hoping and trusting that the humans that are making up this world, that we will be able to make something great out of it. Most of us are going to survive. The question is, are we going to be better? Like you said, Karen. Mm-hmm. And I'm very hopeful for that.
So I love history. I love reading, just love studying past civilizations and you know, what's come before us. And I think it's so fascinating how people today think that, like, this is the first time that humanity has achieved this level of sophistication and accomplishment. And that's like, people, our country is less than 300 years old. Like, we are infants. We are babies. There have been great civilizations that have come and gone before us. And it's just hubris. It's just, you think you're the best. You think you're amazing. And so then you stop paying attention to the things that really made you amazing. And so you let them slide. So things like infrastructure, it wouldn't be that hard for things to just slide away. If we don't keep our eye on the ball and keep focusing on the underlying structure that we need to be an effective, efficient, productive society, it doesn't take much to just lose it all.
It's gone. You know, we bought the old Girl Scout camp. Y'all have been there many times over behind Ingalls in Lake Lure. And Russ and I were just talking this morning about a couple of the places where we haven't been maintaining things.
Mm-hmm.
Nature takes it back like that.
Yes.
It's
yes.
Stunning how fast. He said under one of the sheds, there's like a tree that's huge. He goes, I don't even know how a tree can grow this big this fast. And I said, well, that's because that's what nature does. You know, it just takes it back.
Yes.
And and that like that arc of history, Karen, we are such a young nation. And frankly, modern society is such a small percentage of how humans have lived on this earth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having cars, having electricity, having indoor plumbing, having, you know, airplanes, things like that. This is, in the scheme of things, just a tiny blink that we've had these things.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this moment will pass just like all the rest of them. So, you know, I'm leaving this conversation with, you know, a both a sober experience of what it really means to be a business owner right now, and also a lot of hope, because if anybody can figure it out, it's you guys. So,
well, thanks. Yeah.
No, sure. I really appreciate you sharing this and just getting the chance to visit with you. Can you tell people how to find you? Because I bet you might have some new Instagram and Facebook followers after this, especially for my listeners in the Charlotte, greater Charlotte area, who might want to eventually be able to bring their babies to you.
Oh, great. Well, we're pamperedpetsin.com.
Okay.
We are on Facebook and Instagram as well.
Under the same name.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Pampered Pets, plural, in, I-N-N.
All right.
We're located in Mooresville, which is a northern suburb of Charlotte. Mm-hmm. And one of the nice things about being in, you know, a little bit out of the city is we've got over 2 acres, and we've got 25,000 square feet of turfed outdoor luxury play yards and saltwater pool and sunshades.
Nice.
It's very near Lake Norman. And we really can offer a resort experience for pets. And it's hard to describe that. It's best viewed in pictures and in video. And so at our website and in our social platforms, we've got some great video that really shows you what a cool place we have, and our staff is in there and they love what they do, and it tells. That's how you provide great service to pets.
Well, you know, it's funny because just having gone on this trip that I was driving across Texas and having to, you know, go back and forth, one of the things that when I had to board my dog, we have a really nice place down the road. It's kind of out in the country. And when I left her, first of all, she was happy. You can, the dogs will tell you if they're happy.
They'll tell you.
And the second thing was, when I left, I did not think about her again, because what he basically was selling, and I think this is what you all sell, it's peace of mind.
Right.
I don't have to worry about my dog while I'm gone. And I've been on the other end of phone calls with friends who got these frantic phone calls because their dog or cat was in care with somebody, and it ruined their vacation, it ruined their work, it ruined whatever the situation was, because their animal wasn't in good hands.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yes. If anybody takes anything away from this conversation, it's, you know, when you put your pet in good hands and the quality is there and the processes are there to make sure your pet is cared for, that's worth its weight in gold.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's entirely a trust-based business. And yeah. everything that we do and everything that we teach and train our staff is all there's 1,000 tiny things that all add up to whether that customer is going to trust you or not. And it starts with, you know, is the lawn mowed? And is everything swept? And what does the lobby smell like? And what does your uniform look like? And all those little things add up to when somebody says, you know what, if they take care to this level of detail, then I trust that my pet's in good hands. And that's what we strive for. And
we have a lot of transparency too. So if there is an issue, we'll tell the parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. If we make a mistake, we'll tell the parents, because yeah, we're like, it's their right to know what happened to the pet while the pet was in our care. If they want to call, anytime they want to call and get an update, they can call us, and we'll call in the back and we'll ask the handlers to tell us how their pup did during play group and whether they ate. And so we'll give them, so they can call at any time and get an update. And yeah, I'm just trying to treat people the way that we would want to be treated if we were customers.
When you tell the truth, that builds trust.
That's really awesome. And it's just, you know, that, all of that has a lot to do with how you guys are navigating through this situation. So I really appreciate you taking the time to share all this with my listeners today. And, you know, this is a much bigger conversation than just, you know, this moment, because really y'all in a way have created a playbook for adversity. And that's, you know, I think that's worth it for whether it's this kind of adversity or something else that we don't even know yet.
Yeah, well, a week from now, 2 weeks from now, we may have to throw that playbook out and create a new one, but we can do that.
Well, and see, that's what, I mean, you talked about resetting goals. You've talked about paying attention daily to and listening to what's going on and responding to that rather than a fixed picture. And I believe that adaptability is a key part of sort of creating this playbook for adversity. I fully expect you're going to be changing it as you go. And right. The fact that you are able to change it is what makes it work.
Okay, I'll buy that.
Yeah.
Good.
Well, it was great talking to you.
You too. It was great. We're going to close out right here, but stay on for a second because we'll talk after.
Okay.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Creative Spirits Unleashed podcast. I started this podcast because I was having these great conversations and I wanted to share them with others. I'm always learning in these conversations and I wanted to share that kind of learning with you. Now what I need to hear from you is what you want more of and what you want less of. I really want these podcasts to be of value for the listeners. Also, if you happen to know someone who you think might love them, please share the podcast and of course subscribe and rate it on the different apps that you're using because that's how others will find it. Now, I hope you go and do something very fun today.